You're listening to Heaven is Round, a Chinese theory of cyclical change. My name is Alice, I'm the author, and I'm reading Foundation 1, Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads. Introduction. The theory of Wuxing suffers from a surfeit of translations. The five phases, the five elements, the five agents, five processes, five forces, to name a few. Given that its components are called fire, water, wood, metal, and earth, any choice of translation begs the question of what they are understood to be. And that evolved over time, from raw natural resources to rarefied cosmic powers, approximately the 4th to the 5th centuries BCE. Different translations have been proposed to reflect stages of its development. Hence, there is no one translation that works in all contexts and which pleases all of the experts all of the time. Indeed, perhaps for this reason, the latest trend seems to be no translation at all. Just use Wuxing. After all, its cosmological cousin, Yin Yang, has not suffered the indignity of dubious translations that have stuck to it like barnacles to a shipwreck. I've decided to use its Chinese name, Wuxing, for the traditional theory, and one of its translations, the five phases, for the new perspectives. It's not a perfect solution, but an acceptable workaround. Nevertheless, the conundrum of translation led me to explore the various meanings of this word xing. Wu means five. Nice and simple, no problems there. Does xing mean phase, element, agent, process, or force? Not really. It does mean to process, but as a ritual act of walking, a procession, rather than the natural processes by which trees grow or ores form. As with other Chinese characters, the meaning of xing varies according to context. It can mean to take a step, to go, to walk, to proceed, to travel or circulate. Xing also implies how you behave or how you carry out a series of actions in the sense of a procedure. Used as a noun, xing can mean a road, line, row, column, or rank. When these meanings are juxtaposed, the emerging picture is of action within a greater order. Is that a grand dance of cosmic harmony? The myriad goings and doings of life on Earth are perfectly synchronized. That's the gist of the traditional theory. Or could it be restrictive social conduct? Step out of line and you'll be acting out of order. Now this character, Xing, it can also be pronounced as Hang, but since the theory is usually called Wuxing, to keep things simple, I'll use Xing throughout. Section 1. Unearthing the Oracle Bones. During the late 19th century, in a region of Henan province called Anyang, farmers kept finding bones in their fields. They sold them to pharmacists who ground them into powder to use in remedies. These so-called dragon bones were believed to be fossils with medicinal powers, a long-established tradition in Chinese medicine. I guess it would be like being prescribed dinosaur bone as a cure for osteoporosis. In 1899, the bones caught the eye of Wang Yirong, a director of the Imperial Academy, the traditional seat of learning for all aspiring young civil servants. The story goes that he needed medicine for a fever. The pharmacy provided a packet of dragon bones, ready to be ground, when he and a friend noticed some markings on the bones that looked uncannily like inscriptions on antique bronze vessels. The bones were, in fact, just over 3,000 years old, hardly worthy of the status of a Jurassic fossil. Altogether more potent than a medicinal brew, however, the bones were the first hard evidence of the fabled Shang dynasty that had long been relegated to the archaeological league tables of mere legend. Furthermore, the markings on the bones turned out to be the earliest known source of Chinese writing. After being intensively studied, they were renamed oracle bones because their original purpose had been for divination. Flat, wide bones and shells, such as the shoulder blades of cattle or plastrons, the underbelly of turtles, had been used as writing tablets. Flaming hot rods were inserted into holes in the bones until they cracked. The piercing sound was not the squeals of animal spirits decrying endless human exploitation. No, it was a communique from the royal ancestors of the Shang king. The sound of the crack and its resulting pattern across the bone or shell was their response. Divination was used to ensure that the king's plans, say to do battle or conduct a sacrifice, would accord with the wishes of his deceased superiors. In this way, the forces of fortune would be with him. The outcome of this sacred communion between the living and the dead was duly inscribed onto the bone itself. It is a strange twist of fate that one of China's earliest dynasties, the Shang, was unearthed while its last, the Qing, was crumbling amid internal political tensions that were further exacerbated by the looming presence of foreign powers. The last emperor of China, Puyi, was a mere 6 years old at the time of his abdication in 1912, just as the magnitude of the oracle bone's role in Chinese history was becoming apparent. The Imperial Academy closed its doors in 1905 after centuries of service. While Puyi was divested of his robes as China's last son of heaven, scholars and antique dealers scrambled to acquire these souvenirs of ancient China. Would the prescient powers of the bones and shells lend weight to China's determination to remain a sovereign state? Or would these priceless remains of antiquity be carved up as spoils alongside the country itself? As for Wang Yirong, he became caught up in the Boxer Rebellion, an anti-Western, anti-colonial uprising. When an international force occupied Beijing, he and his family took their own lives. End of section one. Rules of conduct at a crossroads. Section two. Graphic origins of Xing. Both Wu and Xing are found on the oracle bones, but not combined as Wu Xing. The theory of the five phases would take another 1,000 years to unfold. Wu, number five, was written as a diagonal cross sandwiched between two horizontal lines. Numbers 1 to 4 were simply horizontal lines, one line for number 1, 2 for number 2, and so on. But since 5 lines was presumably unwieldy to read and write, a diagonal cross replaced the centre lines. Xing was depicted as a crossroads. And this image was most likely based on the thoroughfares of Shang settlements. How many thoroughfares, how many roads, would depend on the size of the settlement. But we can assume there would have been at least two, one running north to south and the other running east to west. While the word Xing was represented by a crossroads, the word has a range of meanings which cluster around this junction. The crossroads was a visual mnemonic, a memory aid, rather than exclusively meaning a crossroads. For example, Xing can mean to go, to walk, or to proceed. In Shang settlements, people would have travelled along these thoroughfares, going about their daily business with their animals, goods, and carts in tow. If a pig escaped its tether, however, and ran off, upsetting other people's apple carts, the trail of trotters which led to the tearaway hog would have been all over the place. In other words, it's all very well to envisage an orderly pathway along which to proceed, but complications can set in as soon as you set off, especially when you reach a crossroads. Divination is used to ascertain when, how, or whether to proceed. The Shang royal ancestors, whose missives resounded from the cracked shells of turtles, judged whether the king's plans should go ahead. They had the power to clear a spiritual pathway for his worldly endeavours. Ensuring that a course of action will proceed smoothly entails not only deciding when to act, but also how to act your conduct. The I Ching, the Book of Changes, offers counsel on attitude as well as action. Your conduct, your behaviour, is another meaning of xing. And conduct can imply how you carry yourself, your gait, your manner of walking, your posture, as well as how you carry out an action, such as conducting a sacrifice. Implicit is the impact of your conduct upon others, such as people you pass on the street. If the pig owner set off too hastily and did not secure his boar, perhaps he was culpable for the chaos. If the fruit cart was heavily laden and a few ripe pickings fell off, inducing the pig to pull away, maybe the cart owner has to accept some responsibility. Standing at the crossroads of two lines of intent, how do both parties proceed? Now, this question is an extrapolation of xing, not a direct meaning. But once you take a step or initiate an action, sooner or later, you will cross paths with a person or a pig doing likewise. We'll return to this theme. As well as the common folk with their animals, goods and carts in tow, soldiers would have also proceeded along the thoroughfares. The Shang warriors were a fearsome military might in northern China. Many settlements would have doubled up as garrisons, military outposts, as the Shang endeavoured to expand their hold on the most fertile land for growing crops, or to mine ores in order to make weapons. As the soldiers headed out of a settlement to do battle, we might imagine that they proceeded in formation, in rank order. They may have returned to the settlement worse for wear, but hopefully with sufficient honour to carry themselves well, to maintain a dignified gait as noble warriors. And therefore, although xing means to go, to walk, to proceed, there's an emphasis on a group of people walking in a procession. Who walks in front, who is in the centre, who shores up the rear or flanks either side, as well as their attire and insignia show their rank order. Picture a modern military display with all its attendant pomp and circumstance. Lines and rows of soldiers all march with a particular gait. It's not like normal walking. A ruler presides over the display as a demonstration of his, probably, supreme authority. Hence, used as a noun, xing means a line, row, column, or rank. Order should prevail as long as everybody acts in line with their rank. Until a pig escapes its tether and ruins the rank order among humans. Vertical lines and horizontal rows together form a grid. The basic unit of a grid is a cross. One vertical line intersects one horizontal row. Let's shift to a two-dimensional focus and place that cross on a piece of paper. Think of drawing a noughts and crosses game. Two vertical lines and two horizontal rows will create the nine squares of your game. And they will be filled with strategically placed noughts and crosses. Another useful image is the 9x9 grid of a Sudoku game with its 81 squares. However, a grid can expand indefinitely. A modern use of the word xing is the cells of data in a spreadsheet. Add extra columns and rows as your business ledger becomes more complex. Columns and rows are also the grid structure for Chinese writing, which is different to the standard Western script. We start in the top left corner, write horizontally across the page, and start off a new row below the first one. Chinese writing starts in the top right corner. Characters are written vertically down to the bottom of the page, followed by a new column to the left of the first one. Practice books have a grid structure like graph paper. You practice writing one character per square until you learn to write in neat lines and rows. When I asked a Japanese friend what wuxing means, the pronunciation is different in Japanese, it's gogyo, she looked at me quizzically as if my question was too basic to warrant an answer. She replied, "It means five lines of text." She was a museum curator, after all. Heading back now to three dimensions, a traditional image of Chinese cosmology is a round heaven and a square earth. The square earth was partitioned as a grid. Nine squares is a key configuration, with a central square and eight outer squares. Four for the cardinal directions, north, south, east, west, and four for the intercardinal directions, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest. While a planet's spherical shape was not obvious in ancient times, even modern maps have grid lines. Longitudinal lines run north to south, and latitudinal lines run east to west. Grids were also the basis for urban planning. While a city built in an exact square shape posed topographical challenges, grids suited the layout of districts. An idealized city layout from early China, perhaps the 3rd century BCE, had a central palace, residential districts, offices of government, market quarters, a temple for the ancestors, and an altar for the soil and grains. Every cell, so to speak, had its place in the cosmological scheme of things. To take a step further with the meanings of Xing, we are going to visit the market quarters of the city. However, before doing so, back to two dimensions, I want to explain how the image of the crossroads evolved into two graphs that form the modern character. A character, a Chinese character, is the written form of a spoken word, and I use graph to mean the components of a character. Section 7, at the end of this issue, goes into more detail about this point. Now, as Chinese writing became more abstract over time, the left and right sides of the crossroads morphed into two graphs, which mean to step with your left and right foot, respectively. As mentioned, Xing can mean marching soldiers, right, left, right, left, right, left. On a more hesitant note, the two graphs form a phrase, qi qi, which means to walk slowly or unsteadily, or to act in a tentative manner. You proceed falteringly, as if the next step is neither easy nor clear. And the left graph in particular is found in various words, many of which imply action. For example, de, D-E, can mean you have to do something. You have to go to the shop because you've run out of milk. It can also mean to get or to obtain. The left graph forms the left side of this character. The left and right graphs of the crossroads are also prized apart when an extra graph is inserted to form a new word. On the oracle script, if the graph for a person is inserted, this word meant to speak or to tell. Written next to the word for a king, the phrase meant the king speaks or hail the king. It's tempting to picture someone of a senior rank blasting out orders from his megaphone at the junction of the two thoroughfares. Only a few, and mainly archaic, characters have this structure, but one is very famous, as we'll see in due course. End of section 2. Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads, section 3. Goings and doings of the marketplace. Let's now perambulate around the city's market quarters. Some of the meanings of xing hark back to the activities of a marketplace. Markets had districts for different trades, from fruit sellers to fortune tellers, if your financial fortunes were not looking so peachy this year. Their stalls would have been laid out in lines and rows. Butchers, bakers, sandal makers, used sedan dealers, money lenders, fine fabrics, grave goods. Those professions are obviously figurative, but not without precedent. Grave goods means items to place in tombs. Markets also attracted wandering swordsmen, adept at cutthroat deals in back alleys, on the lookout for some ready cash, working as extras in the latest action movie. Following a sleight of honour, our protagonist swings into action, leaping from roof to roof like an Iron Age practice of parkour. Deftly slicing a melon into pieces, she relishes a juicy bite while idly fending off four foes at once as they try to attack her from the front, from the rear, and from either side. A central square of the market was used for public spectacles, proclamations, rewards and punishments with live footage of gory dismemberments. A lofty watchtower was fully stocked with officials who ensured that goods were bought and sold on agreed terms and palace coffers benefited. Perhaps they also eyed up a choice cut of their own. Stallholders not only displayed their wares, but also showed off their talents at carving meat, crafting grave goods and telling fortunes. How much longer do you have to purchase your afterlife tombware? Xing can mean to carry out an action, but the implication is skilled execution. I don't mean so much beheadings in the central square, but any professional or technical skill, a line of work. A skill is a series of actions which are initially learnt in the same tentative manner as taking your first steps. Initial fumbling attempts are honed into a refined quality of craftsmanship, which is so deft that an untrained eye cannot see the discrete steps of a sequence. Even if your line of work is to dismember criminals in the central square of the market, a certain flair is still on display. A modern colloquial use of xing is to tease a show off. And another modern use is in the words for a bank, industry or trade. The circulation of money and goods is implied. Let's hope all financial transactions are accounted for in the neat lines and rows of a ledger, lest shady deals start taking place in the back alleys of bookkeeping. A famous modern crossroads is Tokyo's Shibuya Crossing. Thousands of vehicles and pedestrians traverse this crossing every day, the majority while carrying out their professions. As for IKEA's marketplace, you'll go through its one-way system, but you'll brook a great clash of the trolleys if you try to backtrack to find a kitchen gadget that you forgot to pick up. Ideally, as long as everyone follows the same rules of conduct, there will be no collisions. Nevertheless, with all the marketplace bargaining, one line of intent can easily cross paths with another. Do the two parties cross swords? Does one back down and let the other pass? If they can go and do as they please, how does such interaction operate smoothly? And let's return to the theme of our conduct, our behaviour. Before wrapping up section 3, however, I'd like to mention some of the characters that have been illustrating the themes. And now these characters are they have the left graph and the right graph of 行, but with an extra graph inserted in the middle, and that indicates the particular meaning and sound of the word. So, for instance, we have 巷. It means a back alley or a side street, X-I-A-N-G, tone 4. Another character with the same structure, the left and right graphs of 行, but now a different graph in the middle, and this word means to peddle your wares, to flaunt, to dazzle, to delude. In Chinese, it's 宣, X-U-A-N, tone 4. And another one, and in this case, the graph for a tree is placed in the centre. And it means a specialist skill, craftsmanship, technique. So think of woodwork. And in Chinese, it's 树, S-H-U, also fourth tone. Then we have to charge into, to butt, to collide, to run against. Chong, C-H-O-N-G, tone 1. And then two words where you've got the character 行 with another character. Yes, there's one that's got the money graph in, and it means bank. In hang. So here we have hang, which is the alternative pronunciation to 行, but the same character. Also, two characters together, two words, mean an industry or a trade. In this case, hang ye, ye, y-e, after the hang, but hang also 行. And that's the end of section 3. Rules of conduct at a crossroads, section 4. Moral conduct. A modern use of 行 is to translate the phrase, okay. If someone asks how you're doing, you might reply, I'm okay. Your life is proceeding well, or at least not too badly. Another use is to agree to a plan of action. To say, okay, means that you think a plan is workable. You're happy to be involved, or you agree to what someone else intends to do. The phrase has the feel of buying into something. It's not okay to come home late without texting first, or to overcharge for shoddy goods. To go, to proceed, to act, to carry out, with an underlying theme of direction and alignment. If your action is along the right lines, then it's okay. You can go ahead. English idioms also make a link between action, direction, and socially appropriate behaviour. For example, towing the line, going straight, back on track, on the right lines, or on the straight and narrow. Whereas inappropriate behaviour is described as speaking out of turn, acting out of order, or going off the rails. In this sense, we can bring in another activity of the marketplace: regulations, supervisory bodies, rewards and punishments. Each family, club, professional body, religious order, or a country has a set of rules for how to behave. Some are explicit, others are implicit. Let's say all the artisans working in the same quarters of a market agree on a code of conduct, like a medieval guild. If your actions fall out of alignment with those codes, you could be accused of professional misconduct, antisocial behaviour, disloyalty, letting the side down, or even heresy. Picture a climbing plant tied to a lattice. You can grow in and out of the lattice, but if you grow too many offshoots, you're likely to get pruned. Rules are the lattice, the social grid along which we are each expected to move and act. If your actions go out of step with the rules, or you do something out of order in relation to the codes of your club, clan, or country, you could be teased, ostracised, ignored, fined, imprisoned, executed, or greatly revered as an innovative pioneer who forges new pathways. Criminals have their freedom of movement and social interaction curtailed. they are confined or dismembered. Henceforth, they must toe the line. And that line can be pretty narrow, especially if their toes have been removed. Someone has to decide, according to law or established customs, how an offender should be punished. In order to ensure a fair decision, the scruples of those passing judgment are paramount. Ironically, there was another wuxing in circulation in early China, although it had no ostensible link to its natural counterpart. The five conducts are benevolence, righteousness, ritual propriety, wisdom and sagacity. They were qualities to be practiced and honed by officials such as magistrates. Ideally, you are neither too lenient, benevolent, nor too harsh, righteousness, and you follow correct protocol, ritual propriety. If your judgments have wisdom and sagacity, they will reflect those of heaven itself. Marketplace dealings must have been among the cases judged. Mr. Zhao's pig upset Mrs. Li's overloaded apple cart at a busy street junction last month, and both parties claim it was the other person's fault. Witnesses come forward. Our moral heckles are, however, easily raised by any raw deal. An antenna for fairness affects all social exchanges. Marketplace haggling needs to result in a satisfactory outcome for both sides if trade is going to continue. Sticking to your side of the bargain is key to your integrity in the eyes of others. Back in Europe, the moral connotation of conduct is dated to the early 18th century. Before then, conduct implied a safe passage. To arrive in good conduct meant that you had reached your destination without getting lost or being attacked by highwaymen. In Latin, conducere means to lead or guide. A bus conductor ensures safe passage while watching out for misconduct. Music conductors use highly skilled arm waving to guide an orchestra through a passage of music. Air traffic controllers only wave their arms about when the stress is getting unbearable. A leader's role is also to ensure safe passage. A master craftsman leads apprentices through the step-by-step sequence of learning a skill. A chief executive leads a business through the economic ups and downs of markets. If a leader fails to toe the line set out for their employees to follow, whether shoddy workmanship or dubious financial transactions, we can lose trust and begin to look elsewhere for guidance. That's the end of section 4, and I've added 2 illustrations, again, 2 characters, where xing, the left graph and the right graph of xing, have an extra graph in the middle. And one word means a public office, a magistrate's court. In Chinese, it's ya, ya, tone 2, going up. And then we have another one, which means pleased, satisfied, open, upfront, frank, forthright. Perhaps, this is my guess, conveying the marketplace haggling. And it's kan, K-A-N, tone 4. End of section 4. Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads, Section 5, Leading the Way. One of the most evocative words of Chinese philosophy is Dao, the way, D-A-O, tone 4, going down. As in English, the way is a path and know-how, a way to do something. Both xing and Dao thus mean to proceed along a path and a procedure as skilled action. The way of archery, tea, calligraphy, or even a surgical operation are learned slowly, one step at a time, until the finely crafted movements meld into a precision performance. Otherwise, the archery class may result in a casualty in the operating theatre. There's a good reason why the two words are so closely related. The earliest written forms of Dao have the graph of a head in the centre of the crossroads. A hand or a foot is sometimes added below the head. Although Dao as a word does not date back to the oracle bones, it's thought to be an abbreviated version of the person in the centre of the crossroads that I mentioned earlier. Again, as in English, a head is not only a physical head, but also the head of an organisation. And when the graph for a hand is added, Dao, in this case it's Dao, tone 3, it becomes a verb to lead or to guide. You follow the way, the example of action and direction set out by your head. In Japanese, the graph for a head can also mean a neck. Your head turns this way and that in order to decide which way to go. Leaders need the flexibility to change course while keeping focused on overall goals. Blinkered leaders with stiff necks see only one direction. Dithering leaders look at all options but hesitate to decide which course of action to take. You could say their leadership style has an indecisive chu-chu manner. Both would struggle to lead the way. As the character of Dao morphed over time, the graph for a head became the right side of the character, and the left side of the crossroads, the graph that also means to step with your left foot, it was joined with the graph for a foot to form a word chuo, which means to walk or move. So the two components of Dao, there's a head looking around which way to go and the feet taking steps. That is at least the graphic aspect of Dao. In one of its many philosophical guises, Dao became synonymous with the origins of the cosmos. If all phenomena come out of one source, there must be an underlying unity to all activity, no matter how diverse its manifestations. Even during an interaction, such as buying and selling in the marketplace, there are proper channels, let's call them the way of transactions, that lubricate the encounter so that one line of intent glides fluidly around another, like fish darting here and there, without brooking a great clash of the trolleys. The ideal of harmonious interaction was extended to leadership. People would naturally flow, or perhaps gravitate, towards a ruler or teacher whose exemplary conduct elicits order without force. So long as you follow in their footsteps, your conduct will be along the right lines. Existential dilemmas at the crossroads of life need not happen, as these paragons of virtue have provided the signposts. As long as everyone stays on track, there will be no accidents. The grid is set out and it guides activity. All you have to do is follow the correct way. Yet the evocative ideal of a unified Dao arose at a time of conflict in early China, when ranks were being upended. Not only were there warring states, but also warring ideas and ideals, whose proponents, of course, believed their way was the only correct one. They mocked the ways of rivals in order to gain the ear of rulers, who were more interested in expedient ways and means. The tension of different ways can lead to fraught exchanges, but it also stimulates novelty, new courses of action that no one person or party could have envisaged alone. If the graph for water is placed in the middle of the two sides of xing, this word means to amplify, develop, evolve, overrun or overflow. In short, going a step further or a step too far. The Chinese word is yin, yin, tone 3. Of course, the degree of amplification can run away with itself, like positive feedback on a sound system. but it can also result in a more complex level of order. States adopted the successful methods of allies and enemies, new systems of social and economic organization and military strategies. Roads and waterways enabled the circulation of armaments, goods and emissaries, as well as ideas and ideals. It was along those routes that the theory of Wu Xing and its moral counterpart began to circulate. Returning to the marketplace, the interplay of competition and cooperation can forge new paths. If a stallholder starts selling a popular new product, the existing network of transactions may have to adjust to new channels of supply and demand. That is where things are flowing. Everyone is heading to one stall, not another. This stallholder is leading the way, so to speak. As a result, the footfall of the market can shift its patterns. And if the change is enduring, the whole market layout may need updating. Hence, action and the pathway along which action takes place can be mutually formative. There is neither holy order, the grid is not fixed, nor holy chaos, activity without pathways. The same is true for regulations that guide the conduct of traders. In the modern day marketplace, some argue that supply and demand is most efficient when left to self-regulate. Too many rules, too rigid a grid, can hinder innovation and prop up less viable economic activity. And that is until greed gets the better of scruples, resulting in such eye-watering bailouts that the creed of minimal state intervention falls flat on its face. The danger of positive feedback is its negative consequences. Quoting from a 2,000-year-old text called the Guanzi, "If there are no exorbitant profits, production will be well organized. Expenditures will be properly controlled. Unless there is negligence, there will be no failure. Therefore, it is said that the marketplace may know order or disorder, abundance or scarcity. However, it is incapable of bringing about abundance or scarcity on its own. There is a proper way to manage markets and production." End of quote. Innovation implies risk and experiment, while regulations evoke caution. Of course, rules and laws come out of lessons learnt, risks that backfired. But a far-sighted leader or legislator will promote innovative regulations, especially if it is greed that needs to be checked, rather than risk itself. Wu Xing developed as a guide to align human action within a vast grid of interaction, which included the natural world, the course of the stars, and the ephemeral activities of spirits. Indeed, another meaning of Xing is the orderly, circular pathway of stars. The crossroads of heaven, a celestial junction in Scorpio, is another phrase that has the two sides of Xing with a graph in the middle. It means a great crossing, the junction of many thoroughfares. Shibuya in the sky, you might say. Harmony would prevail as long as human action towed the line, particularly the actions of a leader, as well as the people in his charge. Otherwise, cosmic equilibrium could go awry. If the ladies of the palace wore the wrong coloured silks for the season, all sorts of foreboding weather fronts would loom on the horizon. Based on the logic of this venerable theory, we might deduce that climate change is caused by the fashion faux pas of celebrities at the premiere of their latest action movie. The fortune teller, sitting in a discreet corner of the marketplace, divined how her clients could navigate safe passage through this vast cosmological grid. Avoiding accidents and traffic jams needed a psychic sat-nav. "In 100 days, turn right at the next crossroads of life to encounter good fortune. Oops, missed the turning. Recalculating." In order to weigh up one future probability against another, the ancient art of interpreting cracks on turtle shells has waned in favour of the step-by-step sequences of algorithms. Yet the quest to survive and thrive still holds us enthralled to what might happen, all the while keeping an eye out for the sunnier side of life. The path ahead may be just a little too sunny. End of section 5. Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads, section 6. Conclusion. I found this article interesting and enjoyable to put together. However, while I might know more about what xing means, I'm no further on about translating wu xing, because there are all sorts of additional factors. The majority of meanings clearly refer to human action. The original image was a crossroads, not two intertwining tree branches. Back to the initial point, then. Any choice of translation begs the question of what fire, water, wood, metal, and earth are understood to be. I'll briefly summarize how some of the translations reflect different meanings of xing and different stages of the theory's development. Early references to these five natural resources as a group were called wu cai, C-A-I, tone 2. Cai implies raw materials, hence they were seen as vital resources for people's livelihoods. Of course, fire is not a material, it is a reaction, but if you don't know how to handle fire, you will not be able to smelt metal. Cai can also mean an innate talent or ability, a natural gift. A master craftsman nurtures the raw talent of his apprentices, who in turn learn how to draw out and refine the innate qualities of their materials. Clay, metal, and timber are transformed into ceramics, weapons, and musical instruments, echoing xing as skillful action. Translating wu xing as the five processes was originally proposed as a reflection of the behavioural properties of the five materials. As a craftsman, you need to know that water will seep into the tiniest fissure in your newly fired teapot and render it useless for the way of tea. That is the conduct, the behaviour of water as a liquid. The five processes is a versatile translation, but scholars have come to associate it with this particular brief of behavioural properties. By the 3rd century BCE, amid the burgeoning ideas of the Warring States, the five natural resources were transforming into cosmic powers. The earliest account of the control or regulating cycle is how fire, water, wood, metal, and earth presided over dynastic eras, mentioned in the first section of Foundation 1. Now, the passage refers to wu de, five powers, but they are presented as a sequence, an order, which is one interpretation of xing. The grid structure, especially the nine-square grid, is cosmologically linked to the cycles of wu xing. I'll return to this point in Foundation 5 and 6. The five agents as a translation was vogue in the 90s, but I have not seen this translation in recent literature. An agent is an entity that has intentions and which can make decisions and perform actions. In other words, an agent is an actor, and xing can mean to act. For ancient minds, all sorts of things had agency, from rocks to rivers. The Shang royal ancestors were agents. From gods to ghosts, angels to ancestors, these ephemeral entities have the power, the agency, to influence the banes and boons of human life. Fire, water, wood, metal, and earth were also divine powers which sent forth omens. Hence the translation as the five agents. The five phases as a translation is associated with a mature phase, ironically, of the theory's development, in which yin yang and wu xing were successive phases of qi that governed the interconnected activity in the sky, natural world, and human life. Still cosmic agents, in a way, the emphasis is on their orderly progression, the sequence of how water qi transforms into wood qi and governs fire qi. We'll revisit this theme in the next issue. Writing this article may have left me none the wiser about which translation best suits the theory of wuxing, but it has been really helpful for the new perspectives. In particular, I want to explore this theme of agency in greater depth, with a focus on human goings and doings. On the one hand, we have more control over natural phenomena nowadays. We do not pray to rain gods, we seed clouds. And yet, as our social infrastructures become more complex, ostensibly to meet human needs, paradoxically, we can feel less control over our lives. Mental health and political engagement are predicated on having a sense of agency. Even star-studded celebrities can feel a lack of agency over their agents. That's one theme to revisit. Another point that struck me while weaving together the various meanings of xing is how much they reflect the relationship between wood and metal. I say so in retrospect, as it only occurred to me after I had drafted the first version of this issue. Put very simply, for now, metal is the grid and wood is the activity along the grid. They shape each other in a constant cycle of action and reflection. In the phase of wood, we form intentions, make decisions, and carry out actions. Our sense of agency is strongest in the phase of wood. We navigate safe passage from one place to another or from one point of our lives to another. Metal pertains to the lessons learned, the rules of conduct, the cumulative knowledge of a line of work, and the impartial judgment of a magistrate. The negotiation of what is okay as acceptable behaviour or a workable plan reflects negotiations between wood and metal. Moral conduct is primarily a dialogue between wood and metal. For the relationship between them to work well, however, all the other phases need to be engaged. Otherwise, there'll be a standoff. There is more to be said along these lines in due course. The next issue, Foundation 3, is devoted to the most well-known translation of wuxing, the five elements. That's the end of Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads. But this issue, Foundation 2, I've also added an appendix, which I've called Words Within Words. It's a simple guide to how Chinese characters developed. You can listen to it any time. It's a good complement to the audio introduction. A reminder of a point I made earlier. A character in this context will be the written form of a spoken Chinese word. A graph will be a component of a character. Words are defined by having a sound and a meaning. Letters such as W, O, R, D are components of words. But most letters of the alphabet are just sounds. They have no meaning until they are strung together to make a word. Whereas the graphs of Chinese characters are words in their own right. Typically, one graph indicates what the word means, and the other graph indicates how to pronounce it. We'll come back to this point. Humans have been busy chatting away to each other since time immemorial, but the invention of writing is merely 5,000 years old. It began in Mesopotamia, and then in Egypt and China alongside the rise of states. Writing was initially used to make terse records of who owed what to whom, Mesopotamia, or which ancestor required what type of sacrifice, and why, China. Epics were a later literary project. Most early writing systems evolved out of drawing pictographs. If you want to write the spoken word cart, then draw a box on wheels. Drawing is a time-consuming activity, however, especially the engraving of hard surfaces like bones or shells. As Chinese writing adopted a wider remit than noting down ancestral consultations, The pictographs were abstracted into linear strokes that were easier and quicker to write. For example, on the oracle bones, the word for a pig resembles an animal. However, the graphic trail of trotters led to a series of lines which look more like the fat on a streaky bacon rasher. While pictographs worked well for tangible objects like pigs and carts, abstract concepts were harder to depict in this way. In preparation for a court hearing, if you needed to write, "Mr. Zhao's pig upset Mrs. Li's overloaded apple cart at a busy street junction last Thursday afternoon, and both parties are claiming it was the other person's fault," all manner of abstract words would also need visual representation, let alone the claimant's need for legal representation. All early writing systems developed similar solutions to limit the potentially burgeoning number of visual mnemonics. First, pictographs of tangible objects, such as plants and animals, were used to write words which sounded alike but were harder to depict. For instance, since wheat, the grain wheat, and the verb to come have a similar sound in Old Chinese, the pictograph for wheat was used to write the verb to come. In English, if you wanted to write the word witch, you might draw a figure on a broomstick in between two clauses. Words with a similar meaning also doubled up. The pictograph of an eye was used for the verb to see. And this approach worked well if the context was clear. But confusion could arise if you were to write, "The wheat has come," or "I spy with my little eye," or "Which witch is which?" on the Quidditch pitch. The next solution was for words to share one graph that had a similar meaning or sound, but another graph indicated their distinctions. For instance, droplets of water appear in the characters for ocean, pool, and river, and also to excite or to incite. A word that implies the substance or metaphor of water, e.g. a fluid situation, is likely to include the graph for water. In English, for instance, to incite can also be expressed as stirring up trouble. Simple characters have just one graphic component. They are often ancient words like soil, water, sheep, or pig. Compound characters have more than one graph. Some have up to four or five graphs, but most have two. The semantic graph indicates the meaning of the word, and the phonetic graph indicates its pronunciation. Knowing that a Chinese character means a sheep, dog, or pig is not sufficient. You also have to know how to bleat, bark, and grunt, so to speak, and certainly if you want to speak. Sometimes the phonetic graph also reflects what a word means, again, especially in ancient words. For instance, the word for a male pig in Old Chinese sounded like the word for a home or family. Pigs were a part of family life in China long before writing was invented. The graph for a roof, written over the graph for a pig, means home or family, jia. It doesn't mean a pigsty, unless no one's tidied up recently. A grunting pig was the phonetic clue for the sound of home, or the sound of family mealtimes. In other cases, the phonetic graph is arbitrary. For instance, yang means an ocean, something foreign or overseas, vastness stretching beyond a horizon, and a feeling of ease and contentment. The left side is the water graph, and the right side is a sheep. The sheep does not convey the oceanic bliss of drifting off to sleep after counting vast flocks. It's just a plain old sheep that's also pronounced yang. No connection to yang, the character, is in yin yang, just the same sound. And borrowing one word to convey the sound of another dates back to the oracle bones and continues today as characters are chosen to write foreign words that have overseas origins, such as hamburger, chocolate, chocorito, or London. The meaning of the graphs is not usually relevant. The Chinese words simply sound similar enough to the imported words to represent them. One character is usually spoken as one syllable, and most ancient but still common words are one syllable in length, such as xing. However, depending on the pronunciation, the same syllable can mean a different word. This famous phonetic hurdle for the bleating foreigners results in much amusement for native speakers. For example, and I gave this example on the audio introduction as well, when I was trying to say every day, mei tian, my Chinese friend looked concerned and said, you have no money. What he heard me say was, mei qian. Mandarin, a widely spoken variant of modern Chinese, has four primary tones. Again, you can hear these on the audio introduction. Tone 1 is a steady high pitch, reminiscent of the sound of music. Ray, a drop of golden sun, like the Shang or the Qing dynasties. Tone 2 is a short, rising tone, like a question. Who, what, how? An example is Xing or Yang. Tone 3 is a long tone that falls in pitch and rises again. In English, this tone sounds doubtful or sardonic. I see. Sure. An example is woo. Number 5. Tone 4 is a short, sharp drop, like a warning. No, don't, stop. An example of tone 4 is dao. While other early writing systems developed a purely phonetic script, Chinese maintains this system of words within words. However, the Roman alphabet is also used to write Chinese words nowadays. The first version of Romanization was made 4 centuries ago by Matteo Ricci, a Jesuit priest who features in the next issue, Foundation 3. A system called Wade Giles developed in the 19th century, and another one, Pinyin, was formulated in the 20th century. I use Pinyin apart from some quotes and proper names. Let's have a few examples here. So Wade Giles, Tao is T-A-O. Pinyin is Tao, D-A-O, the way. Wade Giles, the I Ching is I and then C-H-I-N-G. Pinyin is Yi Qing, Y-I-G-I-N-G, Book of Changes, or the Classic of Changes. Tai Chi, Wei Giles, T-A-I-C-H-I. Pinyin, Tai Chi, T-A-I-J-I. And the last word on words concerns dictionaries. English dictionaries index words in alphabetical order, from aardvark to zygote. Chinese dictionaries index a word by one of its graphs, which is typically known as its radical. For example, home and family, jia, is indexed under roof, and ocean is indexed under water. This system was initially developed for one of the earliest Chinese dictionaries about 2,000 years ago. The sound, meaning, stroke order, meaning how you write the character, and the graphic structure of nearly 10,000 characters were grouped under one of these so-called radicals. There's 214 of them still in use today, and that's almost 10 times more shapes to remember than ABC. Now, of these radicals, scholars call them determinatives. Think of them as the sort of section headers of a dictionary, the way we would have A, B, C. Chinese dictionaries have common words under which, let's say, less common or more complex words are listed. And xing, as an ancient but common word, it is radical 144. And the characters listed under Xing are all the ones where the original crossroads, the left and the right side of Xing, meaning stepping with your left foot, your right foot, and there's another graph in the middle. All right, the example that we had was a person in the middle, which on the oracle bones meant to speak or to tell. And the person was abbreviated to a head, perhaps with a foot or a hand, and that became Dao. And what I've been doing through the written version of Rules of Conduct at a Crossroads is using all of these characters, about 12 of them, which all have a graph in the middle of Xing. And I've been using them to effectively illustrate the story. So I'd like to go back through them. Most of them are actually in goings and doings of the marketplace. They're all got the theme of the marketplace trading. So there's Xiang, X-I-A-N-G, tone 4. It means a back alley or a side street. Yeah, the idea of the wandering swordsman adept at cutthroat deals in back alleys. Then there's also Xuan, X-U-A-N, also tone 4. And this word means to peddle your wares, to flaunt, to dazzle, to delude. Yeah, stallholders not only displayed their wares, they also showed off their talents at carving meat and crafting grave goods. Yeah, the modern colloquial meaning of Xing is to tease a show-off who is flaunting, peddling their wares. And then there's Shu, S-H-U, also tone 4, and it means a craftsmanship, technique, a specialist skill. So that's the theme of Xing and skilled action, the sort of craftsmanship that you might see in a traditional market. Another one is Chong, C-H-O-N-G, tone 1. I use this character, this word, to illustrate the story about brooking a great clash of the trolleys in IKEA's marketplace. It could well be, though, that this idea of colliding, charging into, was to do with sieging, when a group of soldiers, marching soldiers, would attack a settlement. And shifting to section 4, moral conduct, I was talking about another Wu Xing, which means five conducts, qualities of being practiced by a magistrate. And again, one of these characters where Xing is the radical is Ya, Y-A, tone 2, and it means a public office, a magistrate's court. Another one is Kan, K-A-N, Kan, tone 4, and it means pleased, satisfied, open, upfront, frank, forthright. To my mind, this character reflects the idea of marketplace bargaining and buying and selling. I mentioned an antenna for fairness that affects all social exchanges. In section 5, leading the way, I mentioned Yan, Y-A-N, tone 3, and this is the one that has Xing with the water graph in the middle, meaning to amplify, develop, evolve, overrun, or overflow. And in section 6, Crossroads of Heaven, I have Tian Chu. Tian means sky or heaven. Chu, that's Q-U with tone 2. And this character, it means a thoroughfare, a big junction. And the phrase together, Tian Chu, it means crossroads of heaven. It's a celestial junction in the constellation of Scorpio. Now, I use these more as illustrations. I don't want to say that they directly reflect all of the meanings, but they were interesting examples, yeah? So that Xing is their common point, their radical, and the middle graph can indicate what the word sounds like, but Xing in this sense, the graph probably indicates the meaning, the overall meaning, and somehow ties all those words together. But I'm not an expert in these things. Okay, thanks for listening.